starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC. You'll meet actresses Gail Storm and Barbara Britton after these words from the Burritt.
This message about saving money is brought to you by the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. The money place. You've probably been hearing a lot about new, higher interest rates on savings accounts. Maybe you've seen ads proclaiming highest rates allowed, or highest rates available, or some other similar statements that lead you to believe that some banks pay you more than others. Well, some do. Savings banks can pay you more than commercial banks, for example. Federal regulations allow it. And some savings institutions pay you more than others, as a matter of policy. But let's get the facts straight. That's the policy at Burritt Mutual. The Big B can and does pay you the highest allowable rates on all accounts that are governed by federal interest rate limits, effective August 1st. You can end the confusion. Simply inquire at any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual, the money place.
Member FDIC. And now the host of Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Thank you and good evening. And with me once again is the man who collects all of these marvelous radio shows so that we can relive the Golden Age of Radio, Ed Corcoran. How are you tonight, Ed?
Well, pretty good, Dick. And tonight it's a little bit special. This is Girls' Night on our show.
That's right. We have two pretty girls lined up for tonight's show. Gail Storm and Barbara Britton.
Oh, boy, what a duo.
Shows from the 50s.
You're lucky.
And let's say hello, first of all, to Gail Storm. Gail, it's good to have you here on the program.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You know, I'll wager that people are wondering, why is Gail Storm on a program about radio? Because certainly they know you from television, from the movies, from the stage. And, of course, at the time that we recorded this program, you were at the Coach Light here in the Hartford area, doing a wonderful show called Cactus Flower.
Right.
Pardon me. Cactus Flower.
I thought I was contagious. Right? I said it. I don't have my night voice yet.
But you did do radio, didn't you?
I wonder how many people know that My Little Margie was radio show, only it was reversed. Usually, you know, the radio show comes first, and then they make a television series. But this was different. We did the television series. We hadn't finished it. We were still doing it when they decided to do the radio series, My Little Margie.
There were several shows, I guess, Ed, during that early part of the 1950s that went that way, didn't they?
Well, this is unique. The only other one I know of that went that way was Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yes. Oh, shucks. I thought you'd come up with that.
All the rest of them, as you said, Gail, they started on radio and then went to TV, like Armis Brooks and Dragnet and Gunsmoke and many, many more of this period.
Well, before we talk about My Little Margie, suppose we talk a bit about Gail Storm.
Sounds good, Dick.
Who's that?
Well, first of all, Gail, I know that your name is originally was Cottle, is that right?
You mean my real name, original and, maiden name.
How did you happen to choose this particular name for your stage career?
I didn't choose it. No mother would name her child Gail Storm, I don't think, now. But I won it in a contest. It was Jesse Lasky's Gateway to Hollywood. And whoever won the contest won the name, you see, whether it suited them or not, or I'm not complaining about it, you understand. I didn't even know it was funny at first. I was so thrilled with it. But Gail Storm was easier than Josephino Wesa Connell. was.
Gail, we could talk at length about movies. Movies came first, I guess. And then,
you know, I actually talk about radio. This, the Gateway to Hollywood was a radio series. So that
was
my first, introduction to show business.
How did it all happen?
Well, Jesse Lasky toured the United States selecting talent in all the different states. And so I won, in Houston, my hometown. And then the winners and the different localities were taken to Hollywood to compete in the finals, which was a 13-week series. Mm-hmm. It was every Sunday night, a big show each week. You know, they would eliminate some of the contestants until it boiled down to the final ones who, would win. And that's also where I won my husband.
Oh, he was on as talent?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And we won it together. He won a Terry, I shouldn't say this, but the name he won was Terry Belmont, which sounds, it's not a strong name. You know, it sounds like a motel or a racing stable or something. And his name is Lee Bonnell, so he went back to that one.
You're just thinking about the fact that you certainly are a prominent singer, which came first?
I had no background. I always loved, music when I was growing up. I'm talking about I loved singing and dancing. But the family, we just didn't have any money, and so I couldn't take lessons. Mm-hmm. That sounds like I'd wipe a tear from my eye. But, that's why I didn't, take lessons and things like that. And so it was after I, had started my career as an actress, and I was under contract to Monogram. And those were great years at Monogram because the producer came to me one day and asked me if I could sing. And I said, well, I can try. So they just started in, and I did some great musicals called things like Campus Rhythm, mm-hmm. or Let's Go Collegiate. And there was one called Freckles Comes Home, really memorable things.
Let's talk about My Little Margie. That's the show
that's
I think
closer.
Everybody remembers. How did it happen? Well, I guess we have to start with television first.
Yes, because I didn't know what it was at first. it seems funny that there were times when we didn't know what television was or hadn't even anticipated it. And it's strange how that happened because I've been doing motion pictures and I've done over 50, pictures, which were great training for television because so many of the pictures were real quickies. And I was kind of my career was kind of in a slump, let's say. And that's usually when nobody thinks about you for anything. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, I got this call, not even through my agent, from Hal Roach Jr., whom I had never met. And he said he would like to have me come over to talk about a television series. And that's what it was with My Little Margie. And they had Charlie Farrell. And I went over and I took the script home, the pilot film script, and I read it. And I thought it was wrong. Now, I had my nerve, I shouldn't have been choosy at all, but it was something that bothered me a little bit about it. I shouldn't really say like incest, but it was the way the characters were, the father and daughter were played against each other that bothered me. So I went back in and I said that I wished, that I felt right about it and I'd love to do a series, but that told him what bothered me about it. And he said, well, let us think about it. So they, they took it and changed it and called me back in. Funny how some things just seem like right things to start, even though everything seems to be wrong. Like we were, My Little Margie was a summer replacement for I Love Lucy, which is supposed to be the kiss of death, at that time.
Sure.
It was. We didn't have like a full 13. We only had 9, which was supposed to be horribly damaging. And we got bad reviews. I didn't get bad reviews or, the people, but just in general, they mm-hmm. felt it just wouldn't go. But it didn't make any difference because there was something about that, that was right and that felt right and people liked it.
I guess they did. It was on the air for a long time.
Yeah.
And the show was on film right
yes,
from the
that's
beginning.
Right.
It,
mm-hmm.
it never went live.
We filmed it it was never live. That always sounds funny. It's always dead. But we filmed it and we had only 2.5 days for each episode.
Wow.
And we had to work Saturdays as well. That was before they let us off on Saturday.
Yeah, and Charlie Farrell, he had a long, he was out of films for about 15 years when
yes,
they got him. That was a great comeback for him, too, wasn't
and
it?
And he loved it. Oh, he just,
It was a great team. I wish you would maybe have a revival of that sometime.
Little
My Big Margie.
Margie.
We were just discussing before we went on the air, the name of the firm was,
Honeywell
and Todd.
Honeywell and Todd.
And there were two different casts other than you and Charlie Farrell between the radio and TV version.
That's right. It's like anything else. Radio acting is, that's a skill, the technique. And it was just much better to have people who were solid radio performers.
And this was done before a live audience, unlike your TV
version.
Yes,
it was. That's right.
With this excerpt we
have. In fact, it was in the top 10 for a long time, which surprises me.
But this show we are going to play has about 50 or 60 different laughs in it, so it's about a laugh a minute or a laugh every 30 seconds.
Shall we listen to My Little Margie?
Let's do that. Okay.
My Little Margie, starring Gail Storm and Charles Farrell.
High above Park Avenue, the day is just beginning. Margie is bright and gay as she goes about the business of preparing breakfast. She has a plan she hopes to interest her father in, so it's important that the day begin happily. And as Vern enters the breakfast room, Margie smiles and says,
"Good morning, Dad."
"What's good about it?"
"My, but we're grouchy this morning, aren't we?"
"I don't know about you, but I'm as bright and cheery as a kangaroo with a porcupine in her pouch."
"Well, here's a cup of coffee, Dad. That'll cheer you up."
"Oh, thanks, baby. Pass the cream, please."
"Here you are."
"Thanks. Sugar, please."
"Oh, we're all out of sugar. I'll run across the hall and borrow some from Mrs. Odette."
"What number two?"
"Mrs. Odette."
"Margie, did you tell your father yet?"
"Tell me what?"
"Not yet. I want to wait till he's feeling better."
"Good morning, all. Margie." "Well,
good morning, Freddie."
"Mrs. Odette."
"Good morning, Freddie."
"Mr. Albright."
So, the patient just took a turn for the worse.
I hope you haven't had your breakfast yet, Mr. Albright."
"Well, what difference does it make to you?"
"I just hate to eat alone."
"Who invited you to breakfast?"
"I have a standing invitation."
"Then go out in the street and stand."
"Please, Mr. Albright, I have to sit down. I'm weak."
"What makes you weak?"
"The elevator brought me up to the 10th floor and my stomach dropped to the basement."
Freddie, the first time I met you, I thought you were nervous and jerky. Yes. Now I just think that you're a jerk."
"Congratulations, Freddie. That's a 50% improvement."
"Did you tell him about Archimedes Edison Bell?"
"Not yet."
"Who is Archimedes Edison Bell?"
"He's an inventor."
"Oh, an inventor, huh? Well, I'd like to meet him."
"Mrs. Odette's and I met Mr. Bell at the annual inventor's show."
"Why, Margie, I'm glad to see that you take an interest in something educational. Some of our foremost scientists display their inventions there."
"Well, we got to talking to Mr. Bell, and he's looking for a company to market one of his inventions, and I told him about Honeywell and Todd. Would you be interested in it?"
"Oh, I might. I'll take it up with Mr. Honeywell."
"Today?"
"Oh, I can't promise to do it today. I'm in a jam because of that B.V. Dugan. Old BVD pulled a fast one. He sold short."
"BVD? Short? Caught you unawares, eh?"
Freddie, are your parents extremely fond of pets?"
"Yes, why?"
"Well, that explains why they brought up a laughing hyena." "I'm going to work."
"But you haven't finished your breakfast."
"One look at Freddie and I lost my appetite."
"Will you talk to Mr. Honeywell?"
"Oh, maybe. Later. Goodbye."
"Goodbye, Dad." "Later."
"I guess you'll just have to wait, Margie."
"Oh, it's too good an opportunity. It can't wait."
"Well, what are you going to do, Margie?"
"We'll cook up something for Dad's own good. Will you help me, Freddie?"
"Yeah, but there's one thing that bothers me."
"What?"
"Every time we cook up something for your dad, I end up in the soup."
"Very kind of you to invite me over to your apartment to meet Mr. Honeywell, Miss Albright."
"Well, he should be here very soon. I invited him for dinner, but I asked him to come early before my father gets home."
"Oh, I think it's very exciting. You being an inventor, Mr. Bell. I'm crazy about inventions, you know."
"You are? What's your favorite invention?"
"Men." "Getting on now."
"What's your hurry?"
"Well, this is a pretty big building, Margie, and if I'm going to tell all the tenants about the excitement in the Albright apartment, I'd better get going."
"Well, if you should bump into Mr. Honeywell or my father, be sure not to say a word."
"Okay, bye."
"I certainly hope Honeywell and Todd will take over the marketing on my invention."
"Oh,
come in, Mr. Honeywell.
Hello, Margie.
Mr. Honeywell, I want you to meet Mr. Bell. He's an inventor.
How do you do, Mr. Bell? I know all about it, Margie. You met Mr. Bell at the Inventor Show. He's invented an electric brain typewriter. You invited me to dinner at the unheard of hour of 5 p.m. so that you and Mr. Bell could talk me into marketing his brain. His typewriter.
Oh, then Dad did talk to you.
No, I just met Mrs. Odette in the hall. Now, this whole thing sounds pretty good to me, Mr. Bell. Now, as I understand it, if you have one of these electric brains in the office, it does all the work of a secretary.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Honeywell. Just as the telephone replaced back fence gossip. Never! Just as the automobile replaced the horse, just as the tractor replaced the plow, so will the electric brain typewriter replace the glamorous butt. Inefficient secretary. This is progress.
Isn't there something a secretary could do?
Nothing but stand around and look beautiful.
Now you're talking. I'll do it. Margie, take this down.
Mm-hmm.
In consideration of $5,000, I, Archimedes Edison Bell, strange name for an inventor, assign all marketing rights of my electric brain typewriter to Honeywell and Todd. Now, you just sign that, Mr. Bell, and here's my check.
Here you are, Mr. Honeywell. Thank you, and I'll be running along now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now then, Margie, when do we eat?
Just as soon as my father gets home. My goodness, it's almost 6:00. I wonder where he is.
He's just getting into the elevator, Margie.
Oh, Mrs. Odette, of course you know that Mr. Honeywell is backing Mr. Bell's invention.
You know me so well.
Oh, Margie, what are you doing here, Mr. Honeywell?
Oh, we're having him for dinner, Dad.
But you promised me that we'd have pork chops.
Oh, it was a great show. As a matter of fact, Gail, was that Verna Felton on the show that we just
Yes,
heard?
I meant to mention that earlier when we were, you know, saying some of the people, and she's such a fine actress. She was just great.
Obviously,
and this was a wonderful learning thing for me, and I'm sure for Charlie Farrell too, because I didn't know radio technique that well, and to work with these people who were so fine and such professionals, you know, you could learn, and it was just really exciting.
We said early 50s, Ed, but can you specify exactly or precisely when this show was on?
No, I'm afraid my records are out of date today.
I
thought maybe
a big prize.
Gail might be able to do that.
Gail,
well,
when did
she
it
was
start,
there
you
at,
know?
The, at the beginning.
What?
When did the show... when did the series start on radio? Can you think?
Was it try.
About 52?
I remember your face, but... possibly, I guess.
How long did the show run on radio? Do you remember?
I wish I could help you. That's great. I don't think that's even in my... I usually try to find my biography and find out, you know, like facts and things like that.
About 4 years.
It was for a good while.
Gail, radio, of course, went by the wayside along about the middle 50s, but television continued for you, and then a new series came along,
mm-hmm.
The name of which is...
Let me see. Oh, Suzanne.
Oh, I'm glad you came up with it. Now, was there much of a transition for you?
Margie was, you know, I loved it and all that, but it was a rough, rough schedule, you know, physically. So I had said that I wouldn't do another series unless it was something I just couldn't resist. You know, like getting married. You shouldn't, unless it's something you just can't do it without. And also when I was doing the Margie series, I had worked with... We'd had Roy Roberts, who played, you know, the captain on the O Susanna one. I loved working with that man. He's, you know, the kind of actor you bounce off of. I just got the biggest kick out of him. And so the thing I said, like, I'll never take another series unless it's something I can't resist, was, and if I do another one, it's going to be with Roy Roberts.
Mm.
And it was so interesting when this, you know, idea was presented to us, and it was just perfect.
Of course, by this time, you had another career going now as a pop singer.
that was fascinating. The very first recording session that I ever did, and the very first song I sang was "I Hear You Knocking," and I got a gold record for
that. Yeah, I was going to say that
just
did
a real treat. You know,
it's worth about $106 an ounce now.
Hold on, I must unframe it. Then I forgot.
I thought of it quite
gone
like
on.
That.
He's a very practical man.
Gail, we're talking about strenuous schedules, and what is it like doing a live performance at least, what, 6 times a week?
I love it. I just, you have to go out for track.
Oh, I was going to say,
because
yeah.
Of, you know, the running, and the, yeah. You know, because they see you come in and go out and run around and change clothes practically. I don't really do that.
That's the best part of the show.
Start to, you know. But they really feel, I think that they feel they're participating.
You said that your major career is that of a wife and mother. Where is home for you?
Oh, in Encino, California. It's in the San Fernando Valley.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss California? How do you like New England weather?
Oh, I've enjoyed it.
Have you really?
Yes.
Oh.
But I just think it's so beautiful back here, and it's so different looking. There's something about the East that's just not like the West. And the old buildings and the old houses, I love those. I just, you know, go along and swiveling my head, enjoying the scenery and...
Well, Gail Storm,
and the
we certainly
especially, you know.
We certainly have enjoyed having you here on the first portion of the Golden Age of Radio and sharing your memories of My Little Margie with us.
My pleasure, thank you.
And we're going to meet another beautiful gal, Barbara Britton, in just a few moments, Ed.
Yeah, I think I can hardly wait.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Dick Britell and the recordings of Ed Corcoran, brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889, and by WTIC.
This message about saving money is brought to you by the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, the money place. Have you heard about the new higher rates on savings accounts? Maybe you've seen ads that mention 7% or more interest on savings certificates. Well, a savings certificate is a special account that, by law, remains on deposit for a specified period of time in order to earn the higher return. 2.5 years is the minimum term on the new 6.75% certificates. At the Big B, they work like this. Deposit $1,000 in one of these certificates and leave it on deposit for 2.5 years, and you'll earn even more than 6.75%. That's because Burritt pays you interest continuously, and the interest earns interest too. So the actual yield at maturity comes to 7.08%. Your $1,000 grows to $1,187.30 at the Big B. That's the straight story. The facts. From the Money Place.
Member FDIC.
Well, let's continue now here on the Golden Age of Radio with Girls' Night as we talk about shows from the 50s. And Ed, our next guest is another very special and charming one.
Well, that's certainly the right word, Dick. Charming, very lovely, and I'm really at a loss for words, Dick. It's the very Barbara Britton.
Glad to have you here on the program, and it's nice especially to learn that you're from Connecticut, aren't you?
Yes, I certainly am. My family and I have been living here off and on for about 18 years since we've been in the East. We came from California about that long ago, settled in New York, figured we couldn't spend all year long in New York, and Connecticut became our home.
And you seem to be familiar with WTIC. I understand
yes.
You listen to Bob Steele, do you?
I certainly do. I even wrote him a letter once.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I have never received fan mail from somebody of the stature of Barbara Britton, I'll have you know.
Send your postcard from Woodbury.
Well, at any rate, Barbara, when I first met you, I was surprised to learn that you did have a career in radio ever so briefly, because radio was on the way out at about the time that you were prominent in the acting field.
It was in pretty good shape, though.
Well, the show that comes to mind immediately, of course, is Mr. and Mrs. North. Now, you did this on TV at first, didn't you?
Yes. It had been, of course, coming from New York on radio for about 12 years. And Richard Denning and I did the television series. And then did the radio show for the last, for 2 years.
Was that out on the coast?
Before it went off the, yes, out there, CBS.
You created the parts, of course, for TV
right.
Initially.
Yes, and then took them over on radio from those darling New York actors.
You know, this is a real switch. As we were talking before we went on the air, many, many shows, as you know, went from radio to television.
Oh, yes,
not
yes.
often very successfully,
as a matter of fact,
but
I worked with so many of those of the, of those really fine radio actors, and
Bill Conrad
one of them.
Always comes
and
to
and
mind,
you know,
yes.
I remember when we were doing a North show, and he came in and saying, "Darn it, you know, the TV is going to do the series of Gunsmoke." And here he'd been doing the radio show, but here was a little short, fat man, you know,
right,
who wanted to
sure.
see that on television. You know, and now here, full circle, here he's a big star on television. Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Maybe that proves yeah. that TV has come of age, too, to accept
yeah. Oh, I think so.
A lead man who doesn't
looks
necessarily
like
have
else.
To... Right, he doesn't have to be handsome.
Uh-huh.
And, what were the problems, if any, Barbara, for you to make a transition from TV to radio? In other
oh,
words,
none. Radio's a ball.
Were there any acting problems at all?
Not necessarily. I'd been an actress a long time, and radio's great fun. I remember having had a baby about that time, and it seems to me like about a week after she was born, I was sitting on a stool doing the Mr. Mr. North Show on radio, which was great fun.
Did you know that they made an Australian rebroadcast of that series called Mr.
No.
Mrs. Collins? Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Oh, I thought it was Mr. Mrs. South. I was out here down under. So, yeah.
Barbara, your career had started for you, I guess, in both motion pictures and the theater long before Mr. and Mrs. North came along.
Well, I came out of school and was discovered for the motion pictures while I was in school in Long Beach, and... Yeah, so I was in the movies a long time ago,
and,
in the 40s.
You appeared in The Story of Dr. Wassell with Gary Cooper.
Yes, that was the second DeMille picture I was in, and then I did the radio show of that with him on the Lux Radio Theater, and I played the part of a school teacher. It was a true story, you know. It was the story of Dr. Wassell and how he had evacuated all of these people from some island out there in the Pacific during the war, and I played the part of a school teacher who had actually had walked across the island, apparently, through the jungle and everything, and was the last one to really get onto a ship. And I remember DeMille, Mr. DeMille, took a hose and just soaked me, held it over my head, and I was just soaking wet, you know? Everything was very real with him.
The actors weren't as protected when doing a DeMille picture as they might have been on
right,
some other film.
Right, indeed.
Of course, another show that you appeared in at least once was the Lady Esther Screen Guild Playhouse.
Yeah, you know, I'd almost forgotten that, but that was quite a nice series, as I remember, and all the stars in Hollywood were on that.
Ed, do you think we might be able to come up with a Screen Guild theater from your collection?
Well, as a matter of fact, Dick, I did go through it very carefully, and I found one with Barbara on it with Alan Ladd.
I remember he was a big star at Paramount at the time.
You towered above him, though, didn't you, at the microphone, Barbara?
Oh, probably a little. Maybe I wore flats and wore. He stood on a box.
He was a handsome man, though. A little on the short side, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You never know it unless you
no,
saw him in real
indeed,
life.
No, because he had great stature as a person, you know.
She sounds really great in this, even as well as she does right here in person with us tonight. So why don't we listen to it?
All right.
Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Lady Esther Screen Guild play tonight, Lucky Jordan. Our starring players, this is Alan Ladd.
This is Marjorie Maine. This is Barbara Britton.
And this is Harry Von Zell. Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in a radio adaptation of Paramount Pictures screen success, Lucky Jordan. It stars Alan Ladd in his original role as Lucky, Marjorie Maine as Annie, Barbara Britton as Jill Evans, and Harry Von Zell as Slip Moran. The Lady Esther Screen Guild Players in Lucky Jordan. Lucky Jordan, they call him. He controls all the rackets around New York. Yes, Lucky Jordan knows all the answers, except to a letter that starts with greetings, which is what his lawyer is trying to explain.
This is different, Lucky. This is war. Everyone owes it to his country to serve.
Well, not me. I don't owe anything to anybody.
But you've got to go, unless you have an exemption.
Say, boss, you wouldn't have a wife and a family.
Ah, don't be funny, Slip.
Well, how about her mother?
I never knew who she was. And I can't get you off. I'm afraid you're in.
Well, you take another think. There must be some old bat who'll call me Sonny for the right kind of dough.
What?
Well, if I need a mother, go out and get me one.
Well, here she is, Lucky. Meet your mother.
Hello, Mr. Jordan. Do I call you son?
You just keep your lip buttoned up. Hey, Slip, is this the best you could do? This drunken old bat?
Gee, boss, what did you expect? Whistle's mother?
But this is the old dame who's always mooching quarters in Times Square. Look at her clothes.
Would you suggest we approach the D.A.R.?
Looks ain't everything, Lucky. I'll do a good job.
Well, just remember what I said about that lip. And when we come out, I'll give you $50.
$50?
Come on. Let's go see that draft board and get it over with.
Rather strange, isn't it, Mr. Jordan, finding your mother just when you need her for exemption?
Well, she just showed up.
I see. Madam, are you dependent on this man?
Am I? Why, if it wasn't for him,
Sure. I take care of her, all right. Mr. Jordan, how much does he contribute to your support?
Well, say like today, he's going to give me...
I'm going to give her $1,000 a month.
$1,000 a month.
I don't see any problem here, none at all.
You don't?
Now, you're obviously well enough fixed so that serving your country will entail no sacrifice. Appeal denied.
Gale! Here! Gilbert!
Here!
Jordan! Where's Jordan? Come on, speak up! Where's Jordan?
He said he thought he'd stay in bed this morning, Sergeant.
Oh. Yeah?
Gonna stay in bed this morning, are you? Come on!
Take it easy, will you? Who do you think you're kicking, Jughead?
I don't have to think, I know. Listen, Jordan, this is the Army. You'll get up and drill and work and follow the rules just like a clock, or I'll wind you up till I break your main stem.
That's pretty rough talk.
And it's gonna get rougher. I'd throw you in the guardhouse right now, except it's your first week and I'm giving you a break.
Okay, Sergeant, then I'll give you a break. I won't say a word about Iowa City or Trenton.
Iowa City? Trenton?
Yeah. I could see you were going to get in my hair, so I had you looked up. What I can't figure out is how an ugly guy like you could get one wife, let alone two.
Here, pipe down. Take it easy, will you? If this gets around, I'll get kicked out of the Army.
Can you guarantee it?
Oh, now, please, Jordan. I've been in the Army for 18 years. I've been waiting for this war.
Well, if you keep your nose clean, maybe I won't talk.
Sure. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Jordan, your squad is digging a latrine.
Are you kidding? Not me.
Yeah, but suppose the lieutenant sees you here. You can't hang around your tent all day.
Who said I was hanging around my tent? Thought those dames run a service club in this camp?
I'm glad you came in, Jill. I've been worried about that soldier over there.
What's the trouble?
Well, he's been here in this club all day. He didn't even go out for lunch. Just sits there reading, eating popcorn.
Did you talk to him?
Well, he wouldn't talk.
Maybe he's shy. I'll try to cheer him up.
Well, all right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Goodbye. Hello, soldier.
Go away or I'll... Hey, what'd you do? Get your face lifted?
What?
What happened to the other dame?
I relieved her.
It's a relief to me, too.
She said you didn't have any lunch. Aren't you hungry?
Yeah, sure. How about a midnight supper in my tent?
You're pretty fresh.
You're pretty. Period.
I think you're just a...
Oh, now, slow down, cute eyes. Hey, how about a bottle of beer?
With all that popcorn in you, you'll swell up like a balloon.
That's great. And I can sail away from this camp and nobody'd know the difference.
What's the matter with you? Are you homesick?
Yeah. I guess I miss my little teddy bear.
Listen, Mr. Smart Aleck, I've been around here long enough to know that no soldier can spend all day in the service club. You're AWL, and I'm going to call the CO and tell him so.
Now, wait a minute, sister.
Hello, give me the colonel's office, please.
That's too bad. It was going to be such a beautiful friendship, too. Hey, you! You in the car? You head for the gate?
That's right.
I'm checking on all civilians. Got your pass out ticket?
Well, yes, right here, but I never have to...
Oh! Sorry I had to sock you, brother, but I need that pass. I need your hat and coat, too. Just till I get out of this dump, and I'm getting out right now.
This message about saving money is brought to you by the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, the money place. You've probably been hearing a lot about new, higher interest rates on savings accounts. Maybe you've seen ads proclaiming highest rates allowed, or highest rates available, or some other similar statements that lead you to believe that some banks pay you more than others. Well, some do. Savings banks can pay you more than commercial banks, for example. Federal regulations allow it. And some savings institutions pay you more than others, as a matter of policy. But let's get the facts straight. That's the policy at Burritt Mutual. The Big B can and does pay you the highest allowable rates on all accounts that are governed by federal interest rate limits, effective August 1st. You can end the confusion. Simply inquire at any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual, the money place.
Member FDIC. And now back to Dick Bertel and his guest, Barbara Britton.
It was, of course, quite an honor to be selected for one of those top-rated radio shows, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yes, because all of the biggest stars in Hollywood, you know, were on them. So it was a great thrill.
How long would you rehearse for a program like that? Would there be much rehearsal?
I don't believe. As I remember, you'd go in the afternoon and kind of go, you know, we'd have the script ahead of time, but you'd kind of go through it, I believe, only once, and then go on the air with it.
Of course, if you were a professional actress, that really wouldn't be that much of a challenge
no,
for you, would it?
No, it really wasn't. And goodness, you know, radio is so great. All you read it, which is, yeah, you know, heaven. but oh boy, I was so thrilled to work with those great radio actors of those days. You know, they could do, you know, seven characters themselves on one show. You know, was just incredible.
And there was a difference between the Hollywood actors and the radio actors.
Yes, I don't think these days an actor works in all the mediums, really. And those days, I don't think they did as much. The radio actors, they started then. I know I've worked with a lot of people who, you know, came from New York and were fine radio actors to begin with years ago. Jeanette Nolan is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Frank and, Lovejoy, perhaps. He was from New York.
Yeah. Then they turned out to be really incredible actors for the camera, and they're just very gifted people, you know.
Sure.
But in those days, they were. Radio actors kind of, well, they were very busy, and so they kept busy enough, I guess, in that field. So it was great fun to be able to, you know, do a series like Mr. and Mrs. North. It was kind of I felt very flattered to be able to go into that medium.
You know, you almost became a soap opera heroine. I guess the test pressings were made for the Progressive Broadcasting System,
yes,
which was established, I think, in 1950. I don't know whether the Progressive Broadcasting System ever became a reality. Do you?
It was on the air, I think, for a few months, very few months, and I had a I starred in a soap opera called This Is Mine. And it wasn't mine for very long.
Barbara, this was the transition period from radio to TV. And, of course, you were very active in Mr. and Mrs. North. Was that on film or live?
Yes, we shot that just like a movie in 2 days, which was pretty quick.
Wow.
But John Loveton was our producer, who had produced the radio show of Mr. and Mrs. North for years in New York. And he also was producing, what's a series about the ghost? You know,
Topper.
The Topper series. And so we would alternate with them. We would we would work, I think, 2 weeks. We'd do 4 shows in 2 weeks, say. That was about a day and a half, or 2.5 days at a time. And then they would shoot their series. They'd make 1 or 2 in the week. Theirs was a little more involved with all of the things that floated through the air and
mm-hmm,
everything.
Mm-hmm. And how long was the series on the air?
We made 56 films and were on the air for 2 years, and then it went into syndication and was on for a long time. A lot of young people I meet nowadays remember it as children, and,
mm-hmm,
and it was a good series. It was kind of fun and light, and we, you know, never took our dead bodies very seriously. We,
yeah.
You know, you never saw anything very bloody or gory. It was
one of the famous lines in that series was, "Look out, Jerry, he's got a gun." Do you remember that?
Yes, or Jerry, is he? You know.
You know, Barbara, just as we're talking here, I begin to realize that in the 50s, the big stars were the gals. You had Tallulah Bankhead doing The Big Show, Gail Storm, Barbara Britton.
Lucille Ball.
That's right. And, of course, our next excerpt is one which we have to include. I think we're going to really review this period. Yeah, Eve Arden.
Yeah, she was really a scream. And this was in Armis Brooks, the old maid schoolteacher, and Gail Gordon is featured, who has gone on to much better things in even in television
sure,
today.
Right.
And, you know, he was the original Flash Gordon on radio, this fellow Gail Gordon. Believe it or not, it's kind of a little aside.
Yeah.
But this is another funny show, and I want to listen to it, Dick, and see whether you agree or not.
See if you like it.
Well, with 1954 a thing of the past, Armis Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is looking forward to 1955 with new hope.
Yes, with new hope that some of my old hopes come true. One of my oldest and most established wishes concerns Mr. Philip Boynton. Specifically, how to teach the bashful biologist that what's good enough for the birds and bees is good enough for him. One thing I knew would help was an extremely seductive dress on display in Sherry's department store last Tuesday. Since they promised to hold it for me until Wednesday at 3:30, when I'd have either to put up or shut up, I was in the not unusual position of having to borrow some money from my landlady. When I first broached the subject Wednesday morning at breakfast, her answer was forthright and direct.
Pardon me, Connie. I think I hear someone at the back door.
But, Mrs. Davis, I've got $10 of it, and all I need to borrow is $30 from you. If you don't want to lend me the money, just say so.
I don't want to lend you the money.
Well, you don't have to be so abrupt about it.
Oh. I'd like to help you out, Connie, but I don't have any money myself. About the only thing I've got left after the holidays is my New Year's resolution.
Oh, did you make a New Year's resolution again this year?
Well, of course, dear. I promised myself not to be so absent-minded anymore.
Well, that sounds like an excellent New Year's resolution, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, what does?
Your resolution about not being so absent-minded in the future, it's excellent.
Well, it certainly is. I wish I'd thought of it. Perhaps you're thinking of the one you made.
As a matter of fact, I did make one. I feel I've been pretty rude to Miss Enright in the past. Anyway, I've resolved not to be nasty and insulting to her, no matter what the provocation. Mrs. Davis? Oh, that must be Mr. Boynton. He promised to pick me up on the way to school today. Come in, Mr. Boynton. The door's open.
But Walter Denton picks you up as a rule, doesn't he?
Yes, usually. But the day before yesterday, Mr. Boynton promised to call for me in case anything happened to Walter's car. And yesterday, Walter had a little accident.
What happened?
Some thumbtacks lodged in his two front tires. My thumbs are still calloused from pushing.
Good morning, Miss Brooks. Hi, Mrs. Davis.
Good morning, Mr. Boynton. Can I fix you a little breakfast?
Oh, please don't go to any bother, Mrs. Davis. I'll just take a bite of whatever's available.
Which arm would you like to start on? Oh, you mean food. Well, sit down and help yourself, Mr. Boynton. We're just discussing our respective New Year's resolutions.
Oh, did you make one of those? I did, too. You see, I've been criticized in some quarters for being rather stingy.
Stingy? Oh, but that's absurd. Why, there's scarcely a date we go out on that you don't insist on paying your own way.
Well, I've resolved not to be stingy or tight in any way during the coming year. Now, what's your resolution?
Well, I've decided to do my best to get along with Miss Enright. Not to insult her, no matter what she says or does.
Oh, you're extending the olive branch.
I'm stuffing each olive personally.
Well, knowing how you two act when you get together, I'll bet your resolution doesn't last more than a couple of days.
For how much? That is, I'd be willing to wager that you'll break your resolution before I break mine, Mr. Boynton.
But I'm not a betting man, Miss Brooks. And we both know how Mr. Conklin feels about gambling.
Well, suppose we put $10 each in the sort of pool, and the last one to break his resolution collects.
That's not a bad idea at that. All right, Miss Brooks, I'll be happy to put up $10.
And I'll be happy to hold it.
Well, here we are, Miss Brooks.
I'm afraid we're a little late.
Oh, I don't think we're in such bad shape. Miss Enright's just arriving, too.
And that's about as bad a shape as you'll find.
Good morning, Miss Enright.
Good morning, Mr. Boynton. Well, what a charming little picture. A handsome, dashing young man and a...
Miss Brooks,
If you're going to stoop to name-calling, Miss Enright...
Miss Brooks, remember your resolution.
Oh, of course. My, you're looking well this morning, Miss Enright.
Oh, thank you, darling. I'd like to say the same for you, but my parents were very strict about fibbing.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I want to put this old crate on the back parking lot.
Oh, really? What's Miss Brooks going to do back there? You're talking about the car. Oh.
Mr. Boynton, would you mind if I changed my resolution to no smoking this year?
A resolution is a resolution. Now, you'd better go ahead in, and I'll see you at lunch.
Well, all right. Goodbye, Mr. Boynton.
Bye, ladies.
Bye-bye, Mr. Boynton. Now, what's all this talk about resolutions, darling? Did you actually make one?
Yes, I resolved to be as friendly as possible to you during the coming year.
But in view of our natural aversion for one another, I'm afraid your resolution is rather impractical, Miss Brooks. Of course, I know I'll keep the New Year's resolution I made.
Really? What is it?
To lose some weight. I started on a 3-week diet last Monday. In fact, I'm quite certain that I'll keep my resolution long after you've broken yours.
For how much?
Well, I'm not a betting woman, Miss Brooks.
And we both know how Mr. Conklin feels about gambling.
Precisely.
Well, now that that's settled, ante up your 10 fish. You see, Mr. Boynton and I have a little pool. We've each put in $10 to sort of insure either of us against breaking his resolution. Suppose you get in on it, too, and the last one to break his or her resolution collects the entire amount.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound much like gambling. All right, Miss Brooks, you're on.
Good. Now, I think we'd better be getting into school. We're a little late already.
Ah, two of the fairest members of my faculty. A good morning to you both.
Good morning to you, Mr. Conklin. I know we're a little late, sir, but if you'll excuse us this once...
Tut, Miss Brooks. To err is human, to forgive divine.
Oh, dear, Mr. Conklin, I'm so glad you feel that way. Well, I don't want to keep my class waiting. I'll see you both later.
Adieu, Miss Enright.
Well, you're in a fine mood this morning, Mr. Conklin.
No finer than I expect to be in every morning for the remainder of 1955, Miss Brooks. You see, I made a little resolution New Year's Day. I have resolved never to shout at anyone during the coming year.
Oh, that's wonderful, sir. I made a resolution, too, to do my best to get along with Miss Enright.
Well, having seen you two in action, I'm positive that your resolution will be broken much sooner than mine.
For how much?
What?
So much for your resolution. What I had in mind wasn't gambling. It was simply a plan to ensure that I get a new dress. That is, that none of us break our resolution.
None of us?
Well, Mr. Boynton, Miss Enright, and I have all made resolutions. We each put $10 into a pool, and the last one to break this resolution collects the entire amount. Would you care to join us, Mr. Conklin?
Would I care to join you? In an unsavory scheme designed solely to circumvent my known hostility to gambling in any form.
But, sir, it's only...
In a scheme that negates every principle I've believed in all my life.
There's $40 in it for the winner.
In a scheme that is as thoroughly corrupt as it isn't really gambling now, is it?
In 1954, I'm going to guess now, you became the spokeswoman for Revlon.
Right, yeah. Was it that long? No, I guess it was that long ago. I was with them
just
for
about,
12
yeah.
years.
$64,000 question was the name of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tremendous departure for a name actress to become a commercial spokeswoman.
Betty Furness had done it, you know, for a little while.
That's right.
And then... I came along and all my friends, you know, really looked down their nose. And I did, too, as a matter of fact. You see, Dick and I had done commercials for Revlon the second year that we were on the air, that Revlon was a sponsor. But we did them as Pam and Jerry, not as Barbara and Dick. And I was going to be in New York to do a Robert Montgomery thing. And my agent said, Revlon has a new series, summer replacement show coming out called The $64,000 Question. They'd like you to do a commercial on the first show. And I said, oh, you know, didn't want to, but I did. You know, after all, it paid rather well. And I did the first show and flew back to Hollywood that night saying, this ridiculous show will never go. Then later I moved to New York and my agent said, why don't you do the commercials just as an interim kind of thing? And of course it became a career.
Sure. Betty Furness will never forget the refrigerator door that either wouldn't open or fell off into her hands when she tried it. You didn't have any disasters like
nothing
that in the days
like
of
nothing quite like that.
Live
I used
TV.
To read everything, and one of the things that I remember was that in the middle of my commercial, they were no longer going to be on me. It was just on other products, and I was still reading. And they told my camera to go to the next shop, and the next shot to move away. And there went my words, I remember. And I remember clattering across the stage following that. And unfortunately, the mic man, followed me with his mic boom, but it was...
One never seems to forget those
right,
terrible moments, I'm afraid. Barbara, you're doing theater now, and you've returned from Florida, I understand.
Yes, I closed the winter season in Palm Beach at the Royal Poinciana in a cute, silly little English comedy called Relatively Speaking. I did it with Tom Poston. We had lots of fun with it. But I just was working up here.
Your husband is not in the theater. He's a psychiatrist,
but your
children are.
Yes, they certainly are. Oh, I'm so proud of my kids, I can't tell you. My son is married. He and his wife are actors with the Shakespeare Festival Theatre in Stratford, Ontario, up in Canada. And they've been there for the last two summers, we'll be there next summer. They've just finished the European tour with the company, which is very exciting. They were with they took King Lear into Taming of the Shrew, and they opened in Montreal, then they went to Copenhagen and Amsterdam and The Hague, and Krakow, and Warsaw, and Moscow, and Leningrad.
And they change the language each appearance.
Isn't it marvelous that everyone understands English? Isn't that the most marvelous experience?
Yeah, that really is exciting.
And my daughter is a singer. She's a lovely mezzo-soprano and is studying at the University of Toronto. Oh, yeah, I have great fun with my kids. I'm very proud of them. Terribly jealous of my son and his wife, of course.
Well, I can imagine. But we're not going to lose you to Florida here in Connecticut, are we, by any chance?
Oh, I don't think so. I think it's nice to have little places to visit all over. But we do love Connecticut.
Barbara, I really enjoyed talking with you today, and thank you so much for appearing with us here on the Golden Age of Radio.
It's fun to reminisce. I'd forgotten a lot of these times.
I'm around
Lad
now anyway.
Indeed, yes.
Great fun visiting with the girls tonight.
Well, we have to do this more often, Dick.
Yes, I like it. All right. Well, until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Bertel and the recordings of Ed Corcoran has been brought to you by WTIC and by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. Be sure to hear the Golden Age of Radio broadcast Thursday, August 23rd, when our guest will be announcer-producer Roger Bauer. You'll hear two Laugh Riot comedy quiz shows, It Pays to Be Ignorant and Can You Top This?, as well as a tale of mystery from the Crime Club. That's Thursday, August 23rd. With the engineering and technical assistance of Bob Sherrago, Golden Age of Radio is produced and edited by Brian Hartnett. This is John Stevens.
Broadcasting from New York City, the Lucky Strike program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Bill Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and...
A dancing program from the Paradise Restaurant in the Great White Way of Manhattan, New York City. Played by Glenn Miller and his orchestra.
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver, the Lone Ranger.